Morning, Tracy.
Morning. How are you, Mick?
I'm doing well. It's just us today, huh?
I know. It's like I joined them like first one here, and I'm like, what's going on? I'm late. Nobody else is here.
This I'm wondering is unusual.
You're right. I'm wondering if the quilt meeting ran until the top of the hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's joining now.
Hey, it's Ben.
Hey, Ben.
Hi.
Brian's joining us today. I feel special.
By the way, Tracy, on the crypto lab, we have the meeting show up every week.
Is it not supposed to, or is it supposed to?
It's not supposed to. It's supposed to be every other week.
Every other week?
Yeah, what we agreed to last week is it would be alternating weeks. I think there was some conflict at that time.
Oh, yeah, with Quilt, right?
Or something, okay. Yeah.
I'll make sure that I get that updated on the calendar.
Yeah, oh, okay, good. I was just about to mention. This is Brian. I just joined. I let the people who were on the Uber conference over there know to come here.
Hey, folks. Good morning. Tom here.
So people still have Uber conference somewhere?
On my calendar, it still says that. For some reason, it didn't get updated.
Weird.
I mean, the one that I track in the calendar invite I track in Google Calendar, I guess I can try to, I don't know if that was a separate thing I set up. I don't know. I'll look at it. I don't want to take time here.
Hi, Brian. How's it going?
Good. I thought I'd drop in and probably try to make dropping in on a regular basis more common occurrence, only because I feel like some of the conversations from last week's TSC call had some relevance to the architecture working group. And I feel like I need to invest a bit more of my time in sorting through some of these issues. And I think this working group can do a lot to resolve some of this cross-project kind of open questions, resolve some of the cross-project open questions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Great.
Let's give folks a few more minutes to join. I just posted the link to the meeting notes page. Just a quick reminder that, we should all be following the antitrust policy. The notice is on the top of our meeting notes page. Boilerplate warning. See who's on so far.
Hey, Ram. It's Greg.
Hey, Greg. How's it going?
Good, good. How are you?
Doing great, doing great. Hi, Ben. Welcome. Good to see you. Glad you could make it today.
Yep. Skipping lunchtime.
Sorry, that's one of the things actually we discussed last time, whether we should move it. And I did reach out to the Iroha folks to see, you know, whether a better time will work for them. I think they're still sorting out who should participate from their side and, you know, whether time is in fact a hindrance and if they would prefer a better time. So I've asked them for that input. And, you know, I'd be open to kind of alternating to between weeks, maybe to see if that will help us expand, you know, participation. Though I think it is getting a bit crowded, Tracy, I think you mentioned that the 8 a.m. slot maybe every other week is being taken up by the Quilt group. Is that right?
So yeah, I mean, it's crowded. I'm looking, let's see, 8 in the morning right now is Quilt on a bi-weekly basis.
I see. Okay.
And then,
bi-weekly coincident with our, so if you wanted to alternate to a other time slot, maybe we can, we'll have to figure out how to alternate with them or something like that, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So That's exactly right. You're right now on the same schedule, same bi-weekly schedule as they are.
All right. All right, I think, we have quorum. So the first thing I would I wanted to kind of cover was the smart contract paper. We did get a new version, I believe, with some comments and edits from our tech writer. Greg, do you want to kind of maybe walk through that and see whether we are pretty much maybe take a last look and see whether we want to kind of go ahead and finish that up?
Yeah, that sounds great. Yep. So, shall I drop the link in Zoom for one just so they can find it?
Yes.
All right. There we go. Yep. So, I think it's looking pretty good. There are a small number of things that Gordon has put in here that are sort of questions. But I think only a small number of them, a minority of them, really will require discussion. So the first comment is on page 5, and it just has to do with kind of titling the different sections of the image on slide 5, figure 1, and unless there's any objections, I'm just going to go ahead and accept that. I think that it's perfectly fine to do that.
I think we should itself, right? So I think right now it's just in the Word document. I think we should put it in the drawing.
Sorry, could you repeat that? I didn't catch what you said.
Yeah, so I think the words right now are just in the document itself. They're not part of the drawing, and I think we should just make them part of the drawing.
Yeah, exactly. And these are exactly the things that I'll start getting into when I get this over to design, and Allie starts working on it. So I'll make sure that that yes, precisely right. That's exactly how we'll implement it. It looks like the next comment is here on page 9, and he is, you know, wondering if we want to be more prescriptive and suggests that we maybe instead of say identifying, but rather recommend. If I you know, my sense from, you know, having worked with this group for a while and feeling like I have a pretty good sense of where we're trying to hit on this content is that we want to not do that. But if others, you know, if anyone disagrees, right, thinks that we should use a stronger word like recommend, you know, let me know. But otherwise, I'll just ignore that.
I'm open to using recommend.
Okay. All right.
What about others?
Yeah, I'm fine with that as well.
Okay. All right. Cool. Scrolling down a bit. Tracy, what are your thoughts here? You've responded to his comment.
I think the way that it's phrased right now, right, is that there's two paragraphs that are focused on kind of the malicious denial of service, and this last paragraph, right, only is it one sentence and talks about kind of the non-malicious denial of service.
Right.
And I think what because what it looks like right now is that, oh, this is just talking about kind of the next three sections, right? And so I'm wondering how do we, I think Gordon's point is possibly a good one, right? Because it's a very confusing sort of segue into, you know, number 2, 3, and 4. You know, even though, yes, number 2, 3, and 4 also do help us prevent non-malicious denial of service, but is there something else that we could say about non-malicious denial of service that would make this not such a standalone sentence that kind of leads itself into 2, 3, and 4?
I see. Got it.
So, you know, maybe a little more verbose in that sentence in that paragraph.
Got it. I understand that. Is there anybody who's on the call who would feel comfortable taking a crack at that? and I'm happy to, but I feel like we'd probably, things would be expedited okay. Done by, you know, more of an expert.
Yeah, the other alternative is we can just remove that line. I don't know whether there's too much added value in elaborating on the non-malicious denial of service. So,
right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that would work for me too. Tracy, others?
This. I guess.
I think we should remove that line because the whole section refers to the integrity and availability.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any objections to going ahead and deleting this? All right.
No.
Okay. Cool. There we go. That's not my formatting. There we go. All right. And then, I'll add the footnote as you've expressed here, Tracy. Gordon is just commenting that he's put these in alphabetical order. I think that's probably fine. I personally kind of like keeping in the ArmsDB. It does seem like that's got some name recognition out there and is useful as a reminder. I've scrolled down now. I'm at the very top of page 12. Does anybody disagree and feel like that's not necessary? All right, we'll leave it.
Not necessary.
Oh, you believe it? You believe the formerly known as ArisDB is not necessary, Vipin?
Yes.
Okay. Do others agree?
I think you can go.
Okay. Great.
And on my spell check, permissible shows up as the red line.
I'm having a bit of a difficult time hearing you, Vipin.
In my spell check, permissionable
right
shows up as with a red.
Yeah, I'm seeing that as well.
I think it should be permissioned smart contract machine, I guess.
Permissioned, okay.
Yep.
Got it. All right, great. Moving right along, we can skip down to the section in top of page 17, smart contracts in Hyperledger Indy. Okay, great. There we go. So a core tenant, I like that. I like how you've reworded this, Tracy, so I'll accept that, but it's archived in comments if anyone wants to revisit it. And that second one looks good to me as well.
Why not get rid of that all those sentences? Instead of saying anything like that, it just says Hyperledger Indy does not host smart contracts.
I'm not following. Sorry. Could you repeat that? What are you recommending?
Just keep the first sentence in the first paragraph and remove the rest of the
I guess I personally don't have a problem with this. I assume that this was written by somebody from the indie community. Do we have anybody from the indie community on this call who could approve that? I don't know.
Because it states it further in the second paragraph.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, when I read this
second
too,
paragraph is really dictating the second sentence. What's that?
Yeah, Vipin, I was agreeing with you. When I read this, I was thinking, how do we combine these first two paragraphs into one paragraph? Because it seemed like it was very duplicative, right? A lot of the same things were being said.
Yep. Okay. Anybody disagree with that or feel like that would be something that we would want to make sure the indie folks were comfortable with? Or do we feel like that's kind of within our editorial domain? I'm fine with it. I see what you're saying, Vipin and Tracy. It does seem redundant to the second paragraph. So I'll probably go ahead and remove it. And I'll just combine it like that.
That's good.
Okay.
And I would change the that sentence to say, rather than storing data in the ledger and then providing access to that data using smart contracts instead of some smart contract. I mean, that's what I would do, but hey, it's a stylistic thing.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good suggestion.
That makes sense.
I like it when it makes sense.
All right. So maybe Tracy, do you want to talk about this? Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, this is my suggestion about how we might change this. I just felt like smart contracts from native home of those smart contracts was very like, what did we just say? I think what's being said here is just that the identities can be referenced in smart contracts from other systems.
Do we even need to reference the identities or rather the smart contracts? Isn't it just about the identities? Can we just say that the identities can be referenced or used by other systems?
Yeah, I mean, we could, right? I think it was done just because this was a smart contract paper.
Okay, I mean, if we want to leave a smart contract reference in there, that's fine, but the whole native home thing just makes no sense.
Yeah.
All right. I'll accept the edit. I mean, one thing that's just occurring to me now is I wonder, do we want to specify allows Indy to provide Hyperledger frameworks? Yeah, I think it's probably not necessary. It's worth, you know, splitting hairs, I guess, but that, I don't know. Thought I'd mention it. Since we have two broad types of projects within Hyperledger, of course, tools and frameworks. But anyway, I think this is good.
Yeah, I mean, we could also change it to Hyperledger DLTs, right?
Yeah, that too.
Or you can just say to provide other DLTs without using Hyperledger or anything else. This allows me to provide other DLTs with a first-class decentralized identity system.
You could go further and say any distributed ledger system.
Yeah. I think that is the intent of this sentence, right?
Yeah. Do we want to try that?
Works for me.
All right. Cool. Okay. We're good. If we scroll then to the middle of page 18, Gordon has a question about the wording here. I think it's correct, but I'll defer to all of you.
Make Hyperledger sawtooth borrow EVM transaction family. Is that the right?
Maybe the hyphen should go between sawtooth and burrow. I don't know.
You know, it's, I mean, I guess I am the appointed trademark.
Sorry.
Enforcer.
How does the sawtooth documentation refer to it? That's what we should use. And I honestly don't remember. So.
Does anybody want to, while we're going through and cleaning some of these other things up, do a quick look up of that and get back to us?
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. The other thing I can just ask, what's our team?
Okay.
I did a Google and it says Sawtooth Burrow Bass EVM. Okay. And Jackson family.
Okay. And I think if anybody here is concerned about this being a bit of a mouthful and too wordy, you know, the trademark guidelines indicate that we really want, you know, we should use Hyperledger in front of the project name, but we must use it upon first instance. And this, of course, isn't the first instance. And so if people here feel like it would make this a little bit more digestible to take off Hyperledger, that's perfectly fine from a trademark perspective. In the event, anybody was worried about that.
Yeah, I think in this case, that's quite long. So maybe we should just call it Sawtooth Burrow EVM.
Yeah. I'm cool with that. And then that's a good question that he asks here about the word tool.
I assume that tool is referring to Seth.
That's the way I read it as well. Does this work for people?
Can we run the new text by the Sawtooth team, perhaps? And,
so.
Just double come. Go ahead, Nick.
And the Seth command is the CLI. I would guess. I think generating keys in the format used by the tool or used by Seth, either one of them would be fine. I wouldn't say Seth tool. I would just either do one or the other.
Yeah. I was just.
Given how the CLI stuff works and the rest of the text, I think either one of them is acceptable or appropriate.
All right. Okay. We'll do that. Moving on to page 19. So,
by the way, the reference is for the Sawtooth Burrow EVM.
Yes.
It's different in the two places.
Yeah, the one I highlighted here says Sawtooth Ethereum Seth transaction family versus the next one. Sawtooth.
So I think the Hyperledger Burrow Ethereum Virtual Machine, yeah, I would refer to, in the second reference, I would go either as Seth Capital because you've already introduced it.
Yeah, we changed Sawtooth Burrow EVM to Seth with a capital S.
Yeah. By the way, is there an easy way? Okay. I'm trying to figure out who's hovering where. I was going to say, just change the code you're hovering over, but wait, there's like four different mouse cursors over it. So
I suggested the edit that I think we were talking about, Nick, was that right?
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking.
Cool. Towards the bottom of page 19, he's just, you know, ordered them alphabetically, which seems fine to me. And he asks, would it be appropriate to include Solidity? Which is an interesting question.
Yeah, and in fact, you might want to add just add a sentence that says something like, and through Seth, and Solidity through Seth, or something like that. It's a slightly different beast. Mm-hmm. I don't think the distinction is really critical. So,
but is it critical though? I mean, just because of this sentence with existing transaction families that support the API.
Well, what I was going to suggest is that calling out Seth is important for any number of reasons, and I think referencing Solidity in there is. We've already hit it pretty hard earlier, so I don't know if we need to do too much. Because the ones below are more semantics rather than programming languages. Yeah.
Yep. I think that's perfect.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Great.
Great. Yeah. And he's recommending here at the top of page 21 that we don't need to refer to these as appendices. I'm fine with that. I don't have a strong feeling about that. how do others feel?
That seems okay.
Okay. And that's a wrap.
All right. So I did see there's a list of contributors here, and we should probably go over that. I see some names that I don't recognize, and we're probably missing a few names who have contributed who are not in there. So.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, yeah. Do you, are you in the document? Do you want to drop the ones in that, I was sort of going off of comments and recollection of call attendance.
I don't know who Lovish is, for instance. Maybe
he's one of the indie people.
Ah, okay, got it. Let's see. I think Hart, you're there. Bin is here. Is Nathan covered here? I didn't see.
Ah, I thought so, but. Nope, you're right. I missed that. Sorry. What's his last name? That'll determine where I put him.
George.
Okay. Nicole?
Who else? Okay, yeah, that sounds good. Anyone else recollect anybody else who we should kind of acknowledge? All right, shall we just put this out for last call, for a week before then saying, hey, we're done. That's what I was thinking of. Does it work?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I'd suggest that we change the share permissions to comment only.
Okay.
Just for because we've spent a lot of time getting it to where we're all happy, and what we would hate for anybody to go in and, you know, most likely inadvertently like edit something. So I think
okay.
if we do that and then send it out, and I'd say, you know, probably maybe how much time do we feel like we want to give people? Maybe till end of day, Tuesday the 3rd or something?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Okay. Great.
All right. Thank you, Greg. That was fantastic. And I'm glad that we are wrapping up one of our deliverables. So.
One more down.
To the team. One more down. And then time to finish up our identity, work item so that we can start working on that paper. So that was the next thing I had on my agenda, if we have the time today to kind of look at it. But before that, I wanted to kind of just get a read from the group about, where we are, what are the next work items that we should prioritize. We have kind of two main tracks going. One is around the identity, system identities work, and the second one that mixed driving on the privacy and confidentiality. So we need to keep pushing on that. But there are several things like the interoperability that we probably need to kind of collaborate with the Quill team a little bit and, you know, figure out what we need to put in here versus what they're working on. Hearts driving the crypto library stuff. And once there's enough from there, and we need to have a discussion around how that feeds into the crypto abstraction layer that we want to put in the architecture doc. But wanted to kind of reach out and say, you know, what are the other priorities that you want to see covered? Brian, welcome your input as well to see what are the items you think we should drive as part of the architecture work group.
Yeah, I'll jump in and start. And first I'll say, I think it'd be useful to have some of this conversation happen on the architecture work group mailing list, just because I think there's people who either can't make it today or can't make it on a regular basis to calls like this, whose input, you know, would be helpful and might even bring in some new voices, new contributors as well. And in the spirit of duocracy, it should always be guided by, well, what do people want to work on? And we have to find that balancing act, right? I'll say that I feel like one thing the community, now that we're 2 years into this, is kind of struggling with is the question of what are really our expectations of each of the projects when it comes to integrating with each other, right? And I think there's a role for the architecture working group in doing something that is otherwise a challenge. Like you can't really go to a project and say, you must implement this feature, right? Or you must port your platform, your stuff to that platform. But I think you can, in a community like Hyperledger, take a little bit of a proactive approach and say, where there has been attempt across the community to come up with a portability or some sort of API between projects, you know, that projects should be expected to make progress in integrating to those common APIs, you know. So for example, I think we're sort of getting there ad hoc with the work that Sawtooth has done with Burrow, and you know, there's some work now going on integrating Fabric and Burrow. And I don't know that we'll have kind of a generic, you know, link between DLTs and smart contract engines. But in other cases, like I feel that tension most you know, clearly with Composer, Explorer, and to a lesser degree, Cello. And I'm wondering if there's something that this group could do to say, hey, here's a halfway ground, a meeting point, and there are probably different APIs for each of those use cases, each of those different kinds of projects. But I think it wouldn't be reasonable, I think, to go to Composer and say, you have to support Aroha. But I think it is reasonable to say, here's the halfway point, and you should expect Aroha devs, you know, to step up and fill in one side of that API, and maybe have a hope or an expectation that Composer community does prioritize meeting the other side of that API. I don't, you know that it's a specific recommendation here so much as I'm feeling some tension, and I feel like the architecture working group is perhaps uniquely suited to resolving some of that tension.
Yeah, that's good input. And you know, we've had this discussion several times in the group, and it's a good time. You know, thanks for instigating that. You know, we kind of the holy grail in some sense that some of us have been pushing for is to say, hey, can we define the functional behavior of modules and push towards a common interface so that they could be common modules that are reused across projects, right? So, you know, obviously that's been more aspirational than real. So we got to figure out how to, like you said, use the opportunities that are coming up when we work across projects and have components that could ideally be shared across projects. And perhaps we should figure out how to, instead of having just the abstract definitions, take a look at how we could define an API for some of those existing building blocks. Any thoughts from the rest of the group? If you're talking, you might be on mute.
Or we're just not talking. Just to bring up, you know, to go back to, you know, what we were talking about with Explorer just a little bit, that the challenge is when we have projects that already have a level of maturity, when somebody's building something for a project, you know, for Explorer, for example, if somebody's looking at Sawtooth and they say, well, I've got two options. One is that I can put a certain amount of effort into trying to make Blockchain Explorer work. And what I will get is a general purpose thing that doesn't have any Sawtooth specific functionality in it. Or I could take the same amount of work and go over here and build my own, which is specific to Sawtooth and will give me the unique value. Most of the time, the developer is going to choose the custom code, right? And when we have inertia in these projects, it's really hard for a developer. And again, your typical open source developer is interested in adopting, is driven by putting the functionality in that they want in that capability. So, I mean, the question I would ask, but really hard, is so, and maybe the crypto library, I think, is a great example of it. What are the components that, by developing, we make people's lives easier, not harder? And I think we've had a hard time. We like the generalization, but getting the generality is harder, and that does not motivate people to participate. So where are the areas where we save people work? And I think the crypto is a great example of that. If we can come up with a solid crypto library that actually is applicable in multiple projects, then it becomes something that's a work saver, not a work creator.
So Mick, to comment on this, I think generally the things that really save... Sorry. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. I can hear you.
Oh, perfect. The things that really save people work are where kind of the interfaces are small or predictable and there's not Sorry, go ahead.
Hard time. We like it.
There's a lot of noise, I think, from Mick's line, perhaps.
I'm muted. I'm not sure if I've got a connection problem, but.
Maybe me.
I think it was more Mick, but why don't you go ahead, Hart, and then.
Sure. So the places where it's easiest to kind of have these cross-project collaborations are places where the interfaces are easy to define and non-controversial and simple, but kind of the code behind them is complicated and tedious. And that's exactly the case for crypto. Getting crypto algorithms implemented correctly can be very, very frustrating and tedious, particularly when you're worried about side channels and things like timing attacks. But, you know, the interfaces are really, really simple, right? You know, it's a signature, you know, has a key generation algorithm, it has a sign algorithm, it has a verify algorithm, and we could all go, you know, into a room and agree on how we wanted to implement these, you know, in an hour. So things like that, I think, are the easiest candidates for cross-project work.
Certainly, it seems like that's a great low-hanging fruit to go after. I guess the other one that we've kind of talked about is once the system identities and the identity services associated with those, right? I guess this is true even for the crypto libraries. Each of the projects is using their own crypto library today. Similarly, they have their own identity services that are implemented in their own projects. The question comes about that, you know, for either of those, how and what is the motivation to migrate to a common component, given that they have something that meets their requirement today? Of course, you know, shouldn't prevent us from moving in that direction and encouraging the projects to adopt, you know, at least the APIs moving forward, right? So.
And I'll jump in. I guess the encouraging projects like the crypto project is definitely the right kind of thing to help answer some of these questions. But I think of it as well. Core to a lot of what we're doing is this concept of a DLT framework, right? And Fabric and Sawtooth and Aroha are very different kinds of DLT frameworks. And I don't think any of us are presuming that one wins in the marketplace over the other. At least when I talk about it, I talk about them as likely coexisting in the same way that MySQL and Cassandra coexist, right? And that might be an unfair comparison. The differences are different than that. But in anticipating this kind of hybrid world where the stuff will be out there, then the tooling that exists around this stuff, you know, the more that tooling can be agnostic might be the wrong word, but supportive of that hybrid kind of vision, I think the more that we can build upon each other's work. And so while it might be easier for somebody who understands Sawtooth well to build a Sawtooth Explorer, if there are things that we can do as a community to nudge that person into combining their efforts with those who are building explorers for Fabric and for Aroha, I'd say the gambit, the calculus still comes out in favor of, you know, we end up with a better tool faster that spans across the three and allows, you know, an organization that's managing multiple blockchain frameworks, you know, to be able to have a unified view of them in some way, right? So I want my cake and to eat it too. I want both the downward looking component level integration, which we'll be able to do a fair bit of, but also the upwards looking, like how do we enable a rich ecosystem of different things building on top of, you know, what will be a manageable number of these different frameworks. Because I don't think we're going to have 40 different frameworks, but I don't think we will only ever have just one. And we should aim for an ecosystem that isn't completely bifurcated based on your choice of DLT, in my opinion. And sending that message out by working on things that make it so you can manage these things in a hybrid way is a message that I think this community would respond favorably to.
I have a suggestion, Brian. The suggestion that I have is related to a project that already does this, which is Caliper. So
there are, you know, the way they have architected it in order to be able to measure multiple DLTs already contains certain, let's say, primitives that would allow something like an explorer to be created. I don't know anything about whether it will allow deployment frameworks, which would be something that writes into stuff, but definitely, you know, the reading part, I'm sure they have done some work in this. So maybe the way is to have them socialize that, and let's start with the reading project, like Explorer, you know, which is basically something that queries or reads the different blockchains. And for Caliper, that functionality, I don't know how complete it is, but definitely they have built it into the framework of the system. So we have to, you know, we probably should invite some of those architects and have them talk about it, and at the same time, you know, get the Explorer folks on at the same time. And that's how we are going to encourage this kind of ideas to spread.
Okay, and if that's something that the architecture working group could say, hey, let's see what Caliper did. Let's see what you know, I know there's SDKs out there for both Fabric and Sawtooth. You know, let's look at what's common between those SDKs, right? If one were to, in theory, do a Python SDK that could talk to both Fabric and Sawtooth kind of invisibly, and or hide some of the DLT-specific details and provide a common interface, you know, I mean, some sort of analysis, maybe as a report that follows the smart contract report and the identity report, you know, approaches to DLT coexistence, you know, or something like that. I mean, something that comes blessed from this group, I think, would have a lot of sway over people outside trying to decide, you know, where do I invest some time and resources? Because, and we do have some ability to be directive. I mean, to, you know, we've got the internship projects that essentially form a place where, you know, Hyperledger is investing some time and money to help nudge certain, get things to get done. You know, and when I go out and talk to companies who haven't yet put FTEs on Hyperledger, they ask, well, what would be the most useful? Being able to say, here's the gaps that would fill in. I mean, all that kind of stuff would be helped hugely by a architectural working group kind of discussion at the very least, and paper that explores and maybe even, you know, sanctions or criticizes approaches being taken out there would be useful. Constructively criticizes.
Yeah, I think we should. Go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say, I know that specifically coming out of discussions that we've had in the architecture group over the last 2 years, the work we're doing on the private data objects stuff will be a cross-ledger capability by design. It's started out that way with the abstractions that we're using. So I'm hoping that we can get something like that moving in that direction, but that's hard. I mean, I admire the goals, Brian, but it works in certain cases. But the reality is that developers want to find something that's the shortest path to the value that they want to receive from it. And even something like an Explorer interface or whatever it is, if it's the same work to build something that's custom and functional and gives you the details as it is to build something that's general, where you have to end up wrangling with a bunch of other people in order to get any custom features to it, you know, that's tough. So I'm not sure where to go other than sort of starting from ground up and building things in order to get to that objective.
And that's why, like, I couldn't come in 2 years ago and mandate that, because we didn't know really what we were building 2 years ago. And I think one can make the case that as time has gone on, these things have crystallized a bit more, the form and the direction. And so this is hard. This is not something you solve with a single paper, obviously, but but as people have hit their 1.0 releases, right, and are thinking about what to do for 2.0, and I'm not arguing for premature abstraction either. I think if I use MySQL and Cassandra as examples, one of them is very clearly no SQL because the primitives and abstractions in SQL have no relation to how Cassandra works. So I'm totally sensitive to all those concerns. Sure. I don't know that there's any other group in the ecosystem chartered with trying to sort through that than the architecture working group.
So I know we're recorded, and I'm probably going to regret this, but I'm going to step out of my Intel hat for a minute. What I said on the call the other day was I think kind of the critical problem, which is those of us who contributed code view that code as kind of our responsibility. Although I know we have engagements in Intel where we are having discussions about with people who are deploying Fabric. I don't, is IBM going off and helping to sell Sawtooth? We still see ourselves as individual companies rather than as a Hyperledger project. I mean, we don't have anything that started grassroots as a Hyperledger project. And until we get that sense of ownership, it's going to be hard to get that generality. And maybe that should be the goal, is to start pulling pieces together to make a Hyperledger project.
And yes, I agree with that. And there are things afoot that I hope to materialize in other places. So solving this is not all on the architecture working group's shoulders, for sure. And some of these problems do disappear if suddenly, N different companies showed up putting in, collectively 20, 40, 100 FTEs, right? They go away with bit with scale. And so part of our question is, how do we get more of those devs climbing that contribution curve and becoming maintainers? Lots of other things to talk about on that front. I'm just thinking, anyways, I've said my piece. But I agree with you, Nick.
That's why something like Huawei's contribution to Caliper took into account all of the different DLTs instead of focusing on one. It depends on somebody who's a user coming into the space with a practical problem and then trying to solve that practical problem. So if you look at the angle they're coming in from, you'll see that it is to their benefit that they write a tool that is general purpose. That's why I'm proposing, I don't know the constituents of the people who are doing Explorer or Cello or Composer for that matter. So it all depends on who's actually participating and what their aims are.
So great discussion. I think it comes to the crux of the issue of working towards like a common framework, right? And I think we have a shared goal with respect to and aspirations there. It's just a question of what is actionable in the current environment, right? And Brian, we should brainstorm around, what are the resources we can bring to bear to kind of work towards those common building blocks. And like you suggested, we should probably continue this conversation over email see whether there's some work items that we can start that will move us towards those aspirations. I totally acknowledge, Nick's earlier points that, this has not been, it's not going to be easy. It's not been easy and it's not going to be easy. So, but we still shouldn't detract from us working towards that goal. We're late, yeah, and is there a white paper called HOT?
Yes, there is.
Okay. So, all right, so we should probably let HOT get going on that, but I think this is a good discussion, and let's see if we can continue our email, and you know, if you can send your thoughts over email, we can we can continue the discussion there, and perhaps surface it in the next next meeting 2 weeks from now. Thanks, folks.
Thank you, everyone. That was a really useful conversation from my perspective. Thank you.
Thanks.